Baptist history again, like we do every morning. Last week we mentioned this man who was the very able assistant to J. Frank Norris in Fort Worth. His name is George Beecham Vick, and we'll look at this man this morning and how the Lord used him in his life. And George Vick was born January 1901. When he was very young, his father left a career as a lawyer, kind of a lawyer politician, and went into the ministry. At the age of 37, he led George, his sixth child, to the Lord and baptized him in 1910. He would often take George on his visitation and his preaching trips. But the preacher died suddenly in his prime, suffering a massive heart attack while preaching in his pulpit I believe it was in 1912, two years later. They lived in Nashville at that time, and then the family, now very impoverished, moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and were there for a long time. As the world went to war, in World War I, young Vic was attracted to a military career, and he actually was appointed to, as he left high school, he was appointed to West Point, but by the time of his graduation, the Great War had come to an end, and he sought other ways to make a living, and he landed a job as an auditor at the office of the Louisville and Nashville Railroad, the L&N Railroad, there in Louisville. He went home one day and he told his mother, he said, "I met the cutest girl at L&N today. Her name was Eloise Baker." Now, the only problem with that was she was engaged to somebody else, but he was determined to marry her, and he did about a year later in May of 1919. And she must have been more than cute. She was a godly woman, and they had a happy marriage for 50 years. She helped him as he served God later in his ministry. And I have to say, if she was engaged, guys, college students, take note. It's not over till it's over. All right. So the next year, he was looking for better work. And the South, in Texas especially, there was an oil boom. And he applied there, found work at a railroad there. As an accountant, as an auditor, and they moved to Texas. It was there in Fort Worth that he was drawn and attracted to the First Baptist Church of Fort Worth, where J. Frank Norris was the preacher. And J. Frank Norris was in the process of building the world's largest church, as we mentioned last night. And Norris immediately saw the qualities in young Beecham Vick. He pursued the young railroad executive, inviting him to join the church staff. Vic resisted until 1924. Then at the age of 23, he felt the Lord would have him join the staff there at First Baptist Church, and he took the first steps into the ministry that would last over 50 years. As his assistant, Beecham Vic ran the Sunday school and led the music program. They said he had a choir of 400. Imagine that. Just an amazing size church. And he ran the Sunday school, of course, and this is what he's most well known for, as he built this into the largest Sunday school in the world. He would spend 25 years there with Norris in Fort Worth. About 10 years later, in 1934, as I mentioned last week, Norris accepted the call to pastor a church in Detroit, Temple Baptist Church. He did so with the understanding that he would remain the pastor of the Texas church, and he commuted the 1,300 miles back and forth. We told that story last week. But he was looking for someone who could run the day-to-day work in Detroit, and he asked Beecham Vic to take the day-to-day operations of Temple Baptist, and Vic then moved to Detroit to take that church and help Norris run the ministry up there. Norris again relied heavily on this exceptional assistant that he had there in Detroit. And the Lord blessed Temple Baptist Church. As I mentioned last week, Vic was the organizer, Norris was the preacher, and the church experienced dramatic growth. The church grew to be I guess, the second largest church in America. So Nora's pastored both those churches at the same time, as we mentioned. Probably the ultimate reason for Temple's growth was not just Norris's preaching, of course, but the cultivation of the dedicated volunteer workers in the church. And that was Beecham Vic's forte. Vic learned from Norris the value of house-to-house visitation. This was a time that house-to-house visitation was a wonderful way to witness to people, as most people sat in their porches at night in the evening after work, and you could walk down the street and talk to everybody. You know, it wasn't like today when people are out so much or closed up, don't answer the door. And the church grew in a wonderful way. Actually, by the 1940s, the church was moving towards the 5,000 attendance mark every Sunday. Now, the success, or I should say the growth in Detroit began to rival, then surpass, the First Baptist Church in Fort Worth. And it may be that Norris was maybe a bit envious of Vic's success, and obviously the clear affection the people had for him. There is a little bit of friction here, as we'll describe. And you remember Norris's personality. He was a fighter, very aggressive man. And so historians think that there was a little bit of that envy as that church really took off. One area of conflict between the two men was the seminary that Norris had built in Fort Worth. And if you remember, the Bible Baptist Seminary had grown into the world's largest seminary, and just thousands of young people trained for God's work there in the 1920s, 1930s. And the problem was that by 1948, the seminary was threatened with financial collapse. There was just Norris, being a great preacher, not a very good businessman, and the seminary was on the verge of collapse. And he turned to Vic for help and asked Vic to come back to Fort Worth and take over the role of president of the seminary. Vic did, even though he told Norris that this may be the thing that eventually breaks us up because of the friction that working too closely together. And it's interesting little things going on here between all these men. And Norris was desperate. He waved off such talk, and he asked Vic to come anyway. Vic became president of the seminary, as I said. His management skills turned the school around. Within 2 years, they were financially stable again. But things continued to grow kind of between the two men. In May of 1950, there was a split. I won't take the time to tell the whole story, but as I mentioned last week, Vic and a number of pastors left Norris's church and began an organization called the World Fundamentalists Group Fellowship, and they began what was known today as the Baptist Bible Fellowship. In that fall, Baptist Bible College was open for business, started in 1950 with 107 students, and G.B. Vic was its president. The Baptist Bible Fellowship would eventually have four colleges around the country. Vic built the fellowship, and its graduates, BBC graduates that graduated, of course, from Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, really, I guess the best way I can describe it is, if you think of the large churches in the 60s and 70s, most of them will be Baptist Bible College graduates. The 60s and 70s will be the heyday of fundamentalism, if you look back in history, and the large church movement and just thousands, perhaps millions of souls saved in the 60s and 70s through churches like this. This church was begun in 1970. My dad's church was begun in 1967. This is that era when so many churches were started, and many of them, many of the very large ones, by graduates of BBC. If you think of Landmark Baptist, John Rawlings, Cleveland Baptist, Roy Thompson, that's Pastor Dameron's pastor there in Cleveland. These are some of the largest churches in America at that time. Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia, Jerry Falwell, he was a BBC graduate. Akron Baptist Temple, Dallas Billington. I don't know if you know, recognize these names. These are very famous pastors and very large churches, all Baptist Bible College graduates. And Vic, though, organized and kept that school growing. As he left Norris, as he went back to Temple Baptist Church, because by this time they had called him as pastor in Detroit, he taught interesting Bible teacher. It is said that his class, his Sunday school class, was the largest in the church. There was 900 people just in his Sunday school class. He would teach through the books of the Bible, much like Pastor Volkman does, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. All the Sunday schools followed his lead. In fact, it's on Wednesday night, largely the gatherings were, or the purpose of Wednesday night service was for him to teach the teachers and workers the lesson that he and the rest of them would share on Sunday. And they would go through the lesson and learn it, and then they would teach that lesson on the Lord's Day. Beecham Vic was a very strong man. He wasn't egotistical. I'm reading a book about him, and they say that he was not unapproachable, although he was a very, very famous man. He was reserved but not aloof. He had been betrayed, but he was not bitter. He was the ultimate servant leader, and just God used him in a great way. I read from one of the books I'm reading about him. On Monday, September 29, 1975, the 74-year-old Vic sat at his desk in his office at Baptist Bible College in Springfield with plenty to rejoice about. Just 3 weeks earlier, he had marked the 40th anniversary with Temple Baptist Church in Detroit. More than 300 men had been called to preach out of his church during his 25 years there. Just the day before, on just an ordinary Sunday, the church had 4,200 people in attendance. He was on his desk was a report that enrollment in BBC for the fall semester was 2,371 students. The Lord was greatly blessing this man's ministry. As the clock ticked 20 past 12, Beecham Vic was suddenly released from his earthly body and ushered into the presence of the Lord. And this author said that I'm sure at some point he heard the words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And, one kind of sad note I would say, it's probably good that he died before he was able to see what would become of his beloved Baptist Bible Fellowship. As the school, as you may know, and many of its churches would slip into neo-evangelicalism around that time and thereafter. It's kind of a sad thing what happened to that wonderful movement in the 50s and 60s and 70s and now what's become of it. But Beecham Vic was a faithful servant of God until his death. And I want to thank the Lord this morning for him and his ministry. And I want to take just a minute, if we could, I think we have it up. I want you to hear about a minute of his preaching so you could hear what his voice was. And so let's see if the sound booth can place a little bit of that.
The human race is subject. If there's one thing held in common by all the 3 billion souls on the earth tonight and in generations past, if there is that one common experience that faces every man, an inescapable experience, then it's the higher part of wisdom to prepare and to be sure you properly prepare for that experience. You know, many people think that when the preacher gets up to preach, if he's an old-fashioned hellfire, damnation type of preacher. I liked what Dr. Rawlings said a while ago. That's the kind that fill this pulpit. Some people have the idea that there are two classes of preachers. One the old-fashioned hellfire, damnation type, and the other the sweeter and the kinder type. Well, friend of mine, you take it from me. If your preacher does not warn you to flee the wrath to come, he's not kind to you. He's not true to the word of God nor to the people to whom he preaches if he does not warn men of a hell to shun, a heaven to gain, of a time when each of us will stand before the judgment bar of Almighty God, there to give an account of the deeds done in the body, whether good or bad.
All right, I'll have the ushers come. I think it's good to hear the preaching of these men. And you know, YouTube is good and bad. And one of the good things about YouTube is the ability to hear these men of God. You can hear them back into even the late 1800s and their preaching. And I think it's really good for us not to lose touch of our history. I really think that's important. And that's one of the problems with maybe the younger generation today as we see what's going on around our country is there's no connection with history and what God has done for us, not just in this country, but as Christians, what God has done for us. So take the time, some time, to go back and listen to some of these sermons. They're wonderful sermons. You get an idea of how God used these men.